Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. Well, over the last week, since today, after the budget last Wednesday, we've been hearing from carers who feel, once again, because they were means tested and still are means tested, and a lot of carers, as we know, you heard from so many of them in the last 7 days, that are 24/7 every week of the year, and it's non-stop. And a number of them said, and this was the other anomaly, the older you get, the less money you get. If you get when you reach 66, if you're lucky enough to have a means tested carer's payment, that will automatically be cut in half. By the way, cut in half from 240, but it's hardly a king's ransom. And a number of people said, 46 years I've been doing it sometimes, and you feel like you're going to end up in A&E, and what is the alternative for my child? I have to bring them home. Well, Linda's contacted us. Linda, good afternoon.
Hey, Joe.
How are you? It began a long time ago, but this episode we're in now, it began on the day before the budget, as it happened last Monday week. What happened, Linda?
Yeah, so my son has autism. He's 16. Yeah. He's non-verbal. He has complex needs and he has moderate learning difficulties. So life has been very tough, Joe. So leading up to the events, what happened last week was Monday I was in work and my husband phoned me to say that my son had smashed the hall door. I left work and when I came home, my husband was more or less barricaded. My son was on the rampage and we said he needs to get into the hospital. We didn't know whether he cut his arm or what damage he had done. So in any way, we had to phone the police, because we knew it would be impossible to get him into the hospital or into the ambulance.
Okay.
So anyway, the police came, my niece and her boyfriend came around, my son came home, and my other son, and yeah, I suppose we were just waiting on the ambulance. But during that time, when we were waiting on the ambulance, the two police were here, and just let's say the two police were from Clontarf. They were absolutely amazing.
Great.
They couldn't believe what was going on.
Yeah.
So anyway, we all had to get into the sitting room, and more or less, we put the chair up against the door, and my son, he was going mad in the hall, continuing to smash everything.
Okay.
So eventually, my son came into the sitting room, and the police had to handcuff him. It was the only way to get him out.
Yeah.
In the meantime, the ambulance... Now, the police, let's be honest, the police did not want to do that. They did not want to be in the situation, because my son, although he's 16, he would have a mind of a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
So anyway, the ambulance came.
Okay.
We got him into the ambulance. We went up to the hospital. We got him to A&E. They put him into a room off the A&E and they sedated him. Now, they had to sedate him because he was very agitated and he was very violent. Now, during this time, Joe, he still had the handcuffs on him. They couldn't take the handcuffs off until everyone was safe. So anyway, they wanted to do blood tests and scans. They did that. That was okay. He was still there on Tuesday. We left the hospital on Tuesday and I got a phone call off one of the doctors to say that they were going to have to do a general anaesthetic because they think there might be something with the brain, so they needed to do a CT scan.
Yeah.
So they just said he would be going into an induced coma, which that happened. He was brought down to the ICU and then he got a chest infection last Friday. So up to now, he's still in the ICU, but he's okay. He's okay, but he's still quite sedated. So we're hoping that he'll get a ward. We're just waiting for him to get a ward. But we can't take him home, Joe, for our own safety. We just cannot take him home.
And as we heard last week from so many carers, the people, they get older and they get stronger. And I presume there have been episodes before, but is this... given that he's now, 16, is this the worst episode?
This is the worst. So this has been, it really has escalated, I'd say, since April, May. He always had them traits, but because he's old and I suppose he's older and his needs are increasing with age and I suppose our house is not for our son's needs, we can't keep him safe anymore and he's extremely strong. He's as strong as an ox.
Yeah, and he's getting stronger. And I presume he's getting taller. What height is he now?
He's 5'9".
Wow.
Yeah.
So he would be extraordinarily difficult to control if he goes into one of his episodes.
Well, Joe, he has attacked me many times, and like I tried to get away, he'd grab onto you and he'd bite you, he'd reef your hair, he'd actually kill you. And you know, and God help him, he doesn't know what he's doing because he's non-verbal and he's extremely frustrated. I definitely think it's the age, when you reach a certain age. I don't know what other families feel on that, but I think, our opinion, it's because of the age. He's too strong, and we're older now. We're in our 50s. We just can't cope anymore.
Yeah. So what are you asking for now, Linda? Begging for, I think.
Well,
is probably the
we
word.
Have said, you know, previously, you know, he needs to go in. No, as much as it kills us.
Take your time.
I'm okay.
Yeah, you're okay.
I'm sorry, Joe. It's
no,
good
just,
to cry,
yeah, of course,
I'm sorry.
It's human.
It's just that, he's there, baby, he's there, pride and joy, and it kills me.
Yeah.
But we can't, there's no choice. But I'm just annoyed with the government because all the funding is going into the wrong resources, like I mean, £9 million for pouches. You know, the most vulnerable kids out there are being let down. I mean, they should be prioritising, you know, more disability services. You know yourself, the mental health, the healthcare, more residential homes, like for my son. And we're walking. I walk full time, and my husband walks. And I'm basically living in my care. I've been living in my care up the last few weeks. And the services that should be helping us, everyone knew about it, you know what I mean? But I think, you know, you're continuing to deal with this. You just get to a point where you're in a crisis and you cannot do it anymore, and you're crying out for help. You know,
and
you're
the hospital,
just not getting it. It's very hard.
To the hospital, you were caring for him brilliantly, and as we hear from all, but to the hospital, did the authorities know that you just cannot bring him home? You were physically.
Oh, yeah, no, in all fairness, they know. The hospital have seen the way my son is, and they know. They're more or less saying, how were you just coping? They understand, but I did say to the doctor, listen, we cannot. Now, they haven't put any pressure on us, and our friends, and they walk really hard. You know yourself, the healthcare in this country.
Yeah.
The doctors and the nurses, they're absolutely amazing, and they're treating my son with the most respect and the most, you know, dignified manner that anyone could do. And they know the situation. We're not the only ones in this situation, but unfortunately, you feel like you're the only ones. I just, you know, I'm so annoyed about the events that led up to this. It could have been all avoided, you know. But
And have you asked for I know the auntie, you've tried to get residential care before, have you?
Yeah, so we have tried, so we've down, so we have referrals.
But it's just that
in.
He's getting older, getting stronger, his needs are changing dramatically. And the ability of yourself and your partner to cope is gone over the line at this stage.
It's gone over the line, Joe, and everything in their house is broken. We haven't got a curtain pole upstairs in the bedroom. We haven't got a door frame. Our kitchen presses are broke. He broke our French doors last year, and that cost us $2,500. So we're walking and replacing everything. Recently, he broke a hall window upstairs, and then the Monday that he was brought to the hospital, he smashed the hall door amongst, you know, panning off the walls. You name about 10 tellies we went through in the last 2 years, phones, tablets, electric fires, and me hob on my cougar is actually broke. That's the third cougar I'm actually going through. So all this, he's so strong that even the window sills in the bedroom, in two of the bedrooms, are up off the wall, off the window.
And did you ever get any respite, Linda?
So we got respite. So he was getting respite every month. But I think there was a change in May and he hasn't got proper respite. And it's down to, I suppose, it's down to the staff. It's not the respite's fault. It's the staff are leaving and they're getting agency workers in. And my son is not getting used to the staff. And that's the main problem. So that was one of the problems in respite. And he didn't get it. Now, we both, myself, we got married there August, 6 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
So he got respite just for them 2 nights. And even coming up to the wedding, Joe, we felt like cancelling the wedding because up to that week, I should have been, you know, relaxed, know, getting pampered. It just wasn't happening because I was sleeping in my car actually that week, believe it or not.
And what
because,
do you,
for my own safety.
But Linda, what do you mean sleeping in your car? You're afraid to go into the house, is it?
Yeah, so what was happening, because this has escalated like to about 10 or 12 times a day, why previously, you know, I'd say back in April, it probably would have been three or four episodes during the week, but the episodes that's going on with my son were escalating a lot longer. So I'd go into the house and he'd be okay probably, and then he'd target me, you know, and he'd get on, latch on to me, and I'd have to get out. And my husband would say, you know, you just go on now and I'll deal with it. But then my husband was in the house and he had to put the chair up against the door. But my husband, like, he didn't want to leave because he was thinking of his son's safety.
Yeah. 51551 is our text number, joe at rt.ie and 0818 715 815. I presume when you mentioned the car, I presume he can't travel in the car with you, Linda, can he?
Oh, no, I don't take him out anymore,
Joe. It's too dangerous.
He has... Yeah, it's too dangerous for our safety and other people's safety as well. But you see, the problem is because he loves going out, and when he gets like that, you can't take him out. Like, my son loves going out in the car and he loves going out in the community. But when he's like that, you just cannot take him out. So he was kind of isolated to the house.
And when he's not, when he doesn't descend into one of these episodes, how is he, Linda, generally? Insofar as you could generalise.
Yeah, so he turned 16 in July, but up until that, like, he's a lovely, I have to say, he's a lovely boy. He's extremely good looking. Yeah. He's has them Angelica looks. He's very good looking. But, he'd be in the garden with my husband. They'd sit down. My husband would bring him out and for hot chocolates and coffee. They'd get their pizzas, to get whatever, and he'd be very good. Yeah. But then, you know, it just changed then, and I think it's just the autism. I think with my son, it's the age. He's starting to get into that age. He needs his own environment, and unfortunately, he could be in pain, and we don't know because he's nonverbal. He can't express himself, and it's all down to frustration, Joe, as well. And I mean, I just feel, you know, we're being let down by the state, and I was in this situation, similar situation, 2017. We hadn't got a school. He was out of school for 7.5 months, and that was really tough. But this is actually, I have to say, compared to that, this is a nightmare.
So where are we now in terms of, do you know where you are in terms of, you can't take him home, full stop.
No, I can't take him home. Okay. I'm the hospital are aware of that. So we're just hoping that he gets a residential care and we'll go from the hospital to the residential care. That's what we're hoping, because as much as we'd love to take him up, like, we're going up to visit him, Joe, up there, and he sees us and he's getting very frustrated and agitated. He wants to get out of the bed because he thinks that we're bringing him home, and we're heartbroken. Like, we just have to leave after 5 minutes. Like, you know, he doesn't understand that we cannot take him home.
And have you, without naming it, Linda, have you a place in mind? Because I see the HSE are saying for the first quarter of 2024, there are 1,414 placement applications for residential care, of which 73 are for children. I don't know how many places they have, but they say, so Kyle is one of 73 waiting for a place to become available. Wow.
Yeah, so at the moment we have been referred to three different residential places. Two we know he's definitely not going to get. The other one I'm hoping he gets.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But we haven't been told officially. We're just hoping. But then again, you've heard people and, you know, they're waiting months, years. But, you know, the problem, Joe, is the main problem is it's the funding and it's the finances to do with these residential cares. And that's what I'm saying. That's why, you know, I'm so annoyed, because the government are failing to prioritise the most vulnerable. And, you know, they should be investing in the likes of residential cares.
And when your house is damaged, I know it's not about property, but does your house insurance cover all that damage? All the broken televisions, cookers, curtain rails, every electronic piece, door smashed. Can you?
Yeah, it has. In the previous, it has, but not everything. It only covers so much. But, like, that's what I'm saying. I work full time, and I feel my money, my wages is going to replace stuff. But then you get fed up and you just say, you know what, there's no point. Like, we have paper plates and plastic cutlery. I can't even bring anyone into my house to give them a cup of tea. My house is in bits, but I haven't even got a cup. And that's being honest with you, because he smashes everything.
You haven't got a cup?
I haven't got a cup, but I will buy a cup. So
I know.
Yeah, so.
And how are you coping?
I'm not coping great, Joe, to be honest with you. I'm off work at the moment. I took these 2 weeks off work. But coming up to the few weeks before our wedding, we got married the 25th of August. I was out sick with stress myself. Had terrible pains in my leg. I don't have health issues I don't want to get into.
Yeah.
And my sister is not well. So all dealing with all that and my son as well, you know, was tough.
Well,
it's been very tough.
Yeah, but you've been doing it for 16 years, Linda, I presume. I know as he gets older, he gets stronger, he gets bigger, he gets more challenging physically as well. And you say he's in an adult body now, but he still has a very, very young mind and he doesn't understand. And but you have been doing it for 16 years. How have you coped?
Well, that's it. Well, me and my husband have been doing it for 16 years.
We've no choice. We do it because we love them. And I know you were talking there about Kyle and how he can be so engaging and lovable and even very attractive. But when he goes into one of his episodes, it's very, very, not difficult. It's very dangerous.
It's very dangerous, Joe. And we tried our best to keep Kyle safe for so long. And it's come to a stage now, up to that day, up to Monday the 30th, we just couldn't. We knew ourselves. We just could not keep him safe. So when he went to the hospital, we just said, you know, whatever the outcome is, we were hoping, you know, he is healthy enough. Like, you know, he's quite healthy. But it's just, it is definitely the autism. And we just cannot take him home now. It breaks our hearts, Joe, and you know, you know yourself as a parent, you want your kids to have the best in life, the best quality of life, but most importantly, you want to keep your child safe. And for a mother to say that you can't keep your child safe, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. Sorry, Joe.
Take your time. And
sorry, Joe. I'm just so emotional.
Just catch your breath. Take your time. Just catch your breath,
okay.
Linda. Why wouldn't you be emotional what you're going through?
I know.
And
it's
I've seen some of the photographs.
Yeah, yeah.
I winced. And I've three. Yeah. I have two big lads that age. I winced when I saw those photographs.
Yeah.
Because you're raising your hand in self-defence.
Yeah,
I know you'd never raise your hand against them anyway, but you're raising your hand in self-defence. You're locking that door in self-defence. You're running out and then locking yourself in the car in self-defence.
Yeah.
And so is your partner. I'm forgetting about him. I'm not forgetting about him. It's the two of you in it, I know. And he's your youngest, so there's older children as well. Have you been on? I don't know. What is the procedure? The HSE? Who do you have to go to in this country? The minister? The Taoiseach? I don't know. Your situation is just heartbreaking. Heartbreaking is too soft a word for it. It is earthquake.
Yeah,
it is apocalyptic. It is. And as you say, it's
reality, Joe.
I know.
You know what I mean?
This is reality.
You know, the type of person I am, I've dealt with a lot in the past, like us all.
Yeah.
And the type of person I am, I just get up and deal with it and get on with it. Because I do think when you go through traumatic times in your life, it does make you a better person. And I believe this process that we're going through, although, you know, I don't want to get upset again, although it breaks my heart, but I know we're doing
it's for the
right.
It's
for the best, and it's not for us. We would love to just take our son out of the hospital, but it's best for our son.
Okay. Eileen Stapleton is listening. Eileen, you're listening to Linda.
I am indeed.
It
brought back horrific memories of the year 2018.
Okay.
It, listening to your caller.
To say hello, Linda. It's Linda is her name, and you're Eileen.
Linda.
Yeah.
How are you?
Hey, Eileen. How are you?
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for what you're going through. And I have gone through the very same thing. But with my son, with autism, he contracted meningococcal meningitis at 4 months, so he had severe brain damage.
Okay.
Now, my son's behaviour was violence towards himself, never towards another person,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The only way you would get injured was if you tried to stop him harming himself. And yeah. In 2018, he was on an overnight stay, and we were meant to have a carer with him, but they didn't turn up. And that morning, he actually had an episode in the bathroom, and he literally put a dent in the bathroom pipe for banging his head. He came downstairs and wrecked the kitchen. The radio, the delf, anything he could get, and my husband was trying to restrain him to stop him hurting himself.
Yeah.
Now, he never touched my husband and never would, or his siblings. We couldn't get any help, and we had to call the guards, and the guards came to the house and an ambulance. And I could hear the guards outside. Has your son got a gun? No. Yeah. Has he got a knife? No. Do you have a dog in the house? Is it safe to come in? And my poor son was there, and he was beginning to calm down.
Yeah.
And he was taken from the house by ambulance and a guard escort to the hospital to get treatment for his head injuries. And it was absolutely horrific. And I can understand what Lindy's going through. But, Joe, the one word of advice I would give to any parent out there with a young child or that they think there is something not right with them, get an assessment. Beg, borrow, or steal to pay for it if you can't get it through the public health service, and do it straight away. We did it for Mark when he was 2.5, and Mark went into residential care when he was 5, coming home every fortnight. He was 5 years of age. And right from the very beginning, Mark would self-harm. You know, we had to put bars on the windows, everything. It was all, you know, internalised, but never towards another person. And that is just, I mean, I'm not going to be of any help to Linda other than to empathise with her for what she's gone through.
Yeah.
But for other people out there, get in there quickly.
Yeah.
And if you have to let your child go, let them go. It broke our hearts to let him go at 5. And then when he was 12 and they couldn't keep him at St. Paul's beyond 18, they said, you start planning now for when he's 12. And now he's in a wonderful place in Redwood, just outside Stamullen, where he has his own apartment, little kitchenette, and two other apartment blocks with him. And he's having a wonderful life. But he can come home, but he will have 2 or 3 carers with him, and he can visit us, and we can go and visit him. And he swims, and he goes horse riding, and he has all sorts of activities, down to Costa every morning for his coffee and his sandwich, you know.
Yeah.
And my main message to you, Joe, is
get in and plan. And Linda has. But the residential, and I know you said it was a very difficult decision, Eileen, but the residential care has made such a difference.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
He has a wonderful quality of life. And I mean, he would have been someone. Now, I remember one particular incident when he was about 14. In the car, he started to bang his head. And we were at traffic lights, and the traffic lights had been red. They turned green. We couldn't move. The two younger children got out of the car, and luckily there was a pharmacy nearby, and the staff from the pharmacy came out to give us help so we could get him home.
Yeah.
You know, we've had awful incidents with him, but all was directed at himself, never at another person.
And what age group would Mark be now, Eileen, can I ask?
Mark is 43 now.
Okay.
And if you were to talk to any of the wonderful staff looking after him, they would tell you he's the nicest, gentlest, kindest, most mannerly person you could meet. But if he gets an episode, it will be directed at himself.
Stay with us, Eileen and Linda. Ger is in Kildare. Ger, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe?
You're listening to Linda and Eileen.
Yeah, Joe, I'm so sad to hear Linda's story, because that was us this time last year, and you know, our son, eventually we didn't collect him from his respite facility, and so he was regarded as an inpatient of the HSE for a number of months. And but I'm so triggered by everything that Linda has said, because it's exactly the way our lives were, you know, ambulance, police, you know, headbanging, violence. It was just, it was horrendous, absolutely horrendous. And I wouldn't wish the experience on my worst enemy, you know, and all directed, same as Eileen, all directed at himself. You know, the pain and the turmoil he was in was just so hard to watch. His shaking, his tremoring, you know, it was just horrendous. His crying because he was sad that he had, you know, let us down by, you know, by what he was doing. It's just so triggering. It's so difficult to listen to. So eventually, you know, through very intense negotiations with the HSC, you know, and the threat of my husband saying to the HSC that if my son came home, my husband would take his own life. He couldn't cope anymore, he said, that I will take my life, he said. And that wasn't, you know, that wasn't just to threaten them. That was just to say, I can't do this anymore. I just can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And so our son moved into a full-time residential placement in December. And I have to say, he's, you know, he's been looked after so wonderfully by the staff there, loved enormously, and comes home on a Sunday for his Sunday roast, and you know, runs around the house to make sure everything is the way he left it, which it is. But there's a sadness among us, because, you know, this isn't what we wanted, and this, you know, this was being flagged for years and years and years. And I just, you know, it's just as Linda said, there's just, the support is just not there. It's just not there. And, you know, like, there's only so much a human being can take, you know, before they break. And I'm listening to Linda there, you know, being stressed and sick and all this type of thing. We have an older lad with special needs as well, who was locked in his bedroom every single weekend because we didn't want him to witness the violence downstairs, you know.
So he went into respite. And you basically said, this is we can't take him home.
No, that's what we had to do, Joe.
I know, I understand. What pressure did you have to resist, Chair?
To push to shove. Yeah, well, the phone call came the very next day. We said that we weren't taking him home from the HSC to say, well, you can't leave him in respite. And we were like, well, we can't take him home. We just simply, well, you know, something would happen to him or to us. And that was what it boiled down to. You know, sort of like, if he continued to bang his head at the ferocity that he was, we were afraid he would die on our watch. That's what we said. We said that we couldn't stand by and watch him die before our eyes, because that's how bad things were getting, you know. And he has, like, scar tissue, he has bumps on his head, and I have no doubt that he probably has damaged his brain as a result of this, you know. But we couldn't stand by as parents, and as his advocates. There is absolutely no way we could stand by and allow him to die before us. You know, there was no way. And also the damage that was being done to my older son, who's now attends counselling for PTSD. You know, it's horrendous. But what goes on behind closed doors, Joe? You know, you just close the door. The outside world doesn't know what's happening. Yeah. You know, the outside world, you know, sort of like, my cushions are all facing the same way. My curtains are, you know, hanging in the right, you know, sort of level. Yeah. But, like, I haven't got there isn't a wall in my house that doesn't have a hole in it. Not a wall. And my son had put through his head through windows. He had put his head through the windscreen of the car. You know, like, it's only by the grace of God that he hasn't had, you know, he hasn't had more severe injuries, you know. But it's horrific. It's absolutely horrific. And we're not whole as a family at all. You know, the trauma is still there, you know. Mm-hmm. And I doubt we ever will be. You know, I this is going to take a long time to heal from, you know.
Yeah. Are you, Linda, I'll come back to Eileen. Actually, I'll take a break if I can. Please stay with us. Joe at RT.ie, 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Glenda, I'm listening to Ger and indeed Eileen. That must give you some amount of support or reassurance that, one, you are trying for the right thing, and hopefully it'll come along sooner rather than later, residential care for your boy. But if he does, and when he does get it, it will make, through Eileen and Ger, I'm basing this on, it will make a positive difference.
Yeah, well, that's what me and my husband were talking about, because, you know, as I told you earlier on, Joe, I work full time, but what happens when I go to work, my husband is, you know, dealing with the situation with my son, and my husband just have to put the chair up against the door. He's dealing with an awful lot. You know, it's the two of us, and he has a special bond with my husband, and it breaks both of our hearts. It's just, you know, you've no idea, but I think we have spoke about this. We hope, we do believe our son will thrive when he gets the residential care. And listen to Eileen and that other woman, Ger, and I have heard other stories. Ger, because they went through the same what we're going through, so they know we can connect, and there's hundreds of families out there going through the same. And I do think, you know, he will thrive. We're giving him a better life. We haven't got a choice. Unfortunately, this has come to this stage where he has to go into residential care. There's no other, you know. And I do think in residential care, they have a team of all different people. There's only me and my husband. There's only two of us. We can't deal with it. We just can't. I can't cope anymore. So my husband takes over. He can't cope. It's not fair on him either. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, and it's too much. And even my going up to the hospital now, Joe, like, it, you know, my husband said even last night, I can't. It's too much watching him. Like, it's heartbreaking to see him like that. And he's heartbroken to see me. You know, we can't. There's only two of us. And, you know, I feel like if something happens to him, like, you know, we just, it's too much, Joe. It's just too much at this stage, you know.
Eileen, did you want to come in there? Did I hear you?
Yeah, I mean, I love your program, Joe. Bless your little cotton socks. You do make miracles happening. I was listening there to Ger, and for years and years and years, I thought, as I looked at Mark and saw how his behaviour was directed at himself, if I could speak to another parent who had a son who directed violence towards himself, I would be so grateful. So after this program, if you want to give my contact details to Ger, I would love to speak with her. Okay. I can't believe I'm actually hearing somebody who has a son who has done exactly as Mark has done.
Okay.
And our second son is also a person with autism, and I lost the first year of his life because I had to keep him locked in a room to keep Mark away from him. Yeah. You know, but that other son, I'm not going to say his name. I'll give you his second name. It's Matthew. He went to primary school, secondary school, when there was nothing known about autism. Yeah. And he got into Trinity College, and he came out with an honours degree in biology and went on to do his master's in biomedical science, and is now working for a pharmaceutical company in Dublin.
Okay.
And there is hope, you know, and there's so many different levels. But I have one last thing to say to you, Joe. I owe an awful debt of gratitude to my husband, Noel, who is absolutely devoted to Mark. We have three other children, and if you saw them in the room together, you would see that very special relationship between Noel and his son, Mark. He's absolutely devoted to him.
Okay.
You know?
And it reminds me, and Linda said it so often, her partner and her family, and Ger as well, the situation with her great-great husband. And we wish you all well.
Absolutely.
And with each of your permission, we'll exchange your three numbers, and you can, if you want to, talk to each other.
And just my final word today is, where I started this conversation with your researchers, is get in there early, and if you have to let your child go, do. My son Mark became very ill with a gardiasis parasite when he was 4 years of age, and he was fading in front of my eyes to the extent that I rang the GP one morning and I said, I want an ambulance here and I want it now, because I don't want to walk into the room and find my son dead. And that morning, an ambulance, and again the guards, and he was taken to hospital. And I knew I couldn't cope with him at home, and at that time St. Paul's Hospital and Special School took him. They didn't have a bed for him. There's only supposed to be four in the ward, and they said, we'd fit him in and we'd put a bed at the end of the room and we'd take him, and okay. they kept him. And he has thrived since then, okay. you know.
Well done.
Joe, sorry, just before you go. I just want to say, obviously, publicly, I want to say a thank you to the people who are looking after my boy now, you know, because they love him enormously. And I was very concerned that he would think that he was unloved, like, you know, mommy and daddy, you know, were no longer in his life, et cetera, et cetera. He is loved enormously, and he's so well cared for, and he's so... You know, he has the best of both worlds now, Joe, because he comes home to us and, you know, sort of like, and we can see him and we can see how well he's doing. And, you know, there is life and there is light at the end of a very, very dark time, you know.
So Linda...
Joe, can I just say something as well before I go? Yeah, so just echoing what Eileen was saying, my husband, Robbie, is fantastic. We'll call it the relationship they have. It's phenomenal. I have to say, they really have a close bond. They always have, and no doubt they will continue. As I said to you, he's broken-hearted as much as I am. We're all broken-hearted as a family. But I am a firm believer in hope, Joe, because hope is good. And I'm hopeful that he is going to get a place. I'm just hanging on to that. And I think if anything comes of this, listen to Eileen and Jay, knowing that they are in the situation that I'm in, and knowing that there's hundreds of families out there as we speak, dealing with the same what we're dealing with, and if we can just even help one family, it would be great.
Okay, Linda, we'll keep in touch. Thank you so much. Three incredible people with three incredible sons, by the way. Three incredible sons. Linda, Eileen, and incredible families. Linda, Eileen, and Jared, thank you so much. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Well, as we walk away trying to advance that situation for Jared, and she's walking away, as you can gather, we'll move on to other topics for a few minutes. Caroline Taylor. Caroline, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thanks very much for having me on.
You see, I blame Brexit. I don't know about you. Who do you blame?
I'm blaming the EU for all of this, all kind of their regulations and... inflexibility with their rules and regulations.
But it's the UK that left the EU.
Oh, I know.
But you're in a terrible situation. You're stranded.
I am. I'm stranded.
Tell us. What happened?
Well, the story is, I came over to County Mayo. On Monday, the 23rd of September.
Okay.
To have a big family reunion with some long lost cousins that were coming over from America to meet us. We met up with them on the 25th, and they went back on the 28th. And we were staying on for another few days, and we went down and had a walk on one of the local beaches.
All right.
And I slipped on some rocks and fell over, and I think that was when I lost my car keys.
Okay.
And I didn't realise till I got back to the car, and I didn't have the keys, and my husband didn't have the keys. So that's when the panic set in, realised we'd lost the keys. We were walking up and down the beach, and all the locals were coming to help us search, but unfortunately, we didn't find the keys. So that afternoon, I contacted my son and said, please, can you send over the spare key? And he sent that over that afternoon
Your son is back in Coventry?
He's back in Coventry, he's 29.
So he puts the key in an envelope?
He did.
Yeah,
and he put it on sign and track. So sign, it's track and sign. When it arrives at the destination, we'd sign for it, and that would be it. And it should have been here within 3 working days. But the post office, unfortunately, didn't put a value to the customs declaration. Mm-hmm. The value they put was zero, and hence it's been stuck in Dublin processing centre ever since. And I've been phoning them up on a daily basis and emailing them to say, is there anything you can do? I know that the declaration was filled in incorrectly. Not my fault, not my son's fault. It's the post office's fault in the UK.
Yeah.
They're obviously not doing their job properly. Anyway, I phoned up the Dublin Processing Centre and they said, There's nothing they can do. I said, can I pay a fee to get this moving onto the destination address? And they said, no, you can't pay a fee. And then I said, is there any chance that I can come down to the centre in Dublin and collect it? And they said, no, it's not accessible to the public. And it's like, there's no kind of flexibility.
So what happens to the key? Is it sent back to Coventry, so to speak?
It's going to be sent back to Coventry. And what I've had to do is contact the centre daily. And finally, they've escalated it to the management centre there. And
this is the Dublin Mail Centre, as it's called.
The Dublin Mail Centre, yes.
Yeah.
So they've escalated it, and it has moved twice. So it's still in Dublin. But I just thought, under the exceptional circumstances, I've got a 93-year-old mother with Alzheimer's in a care home in Coventry. She'll be wondering why I haven't gone in. I've got my mother-in-law, who's 91, who we look after.
Okay.
And she's fretting at the fact that we're stuck here.
Yeah.
And it's just such a stressful situation.
Now, don't tell us where your car is at the minute.
I won't.
But your car is locked in the place where you left, which is not your... You were out for a day, went for a walk, locked the car. That's where the car still is.
The car's still there. I've contacted the local garage, and they said because it's an automatic and a rear-wheel drive, they can't move it. It would damage the car. They can't tow it because the sort of car it is. And I'd left my handbag in the boot of the car, so I had to get a locksmith out to unlock the boot. So the car is, in effect, open.
Okay.
You know, it's sat down
there. What about a locksmith? What about the manufacturer?
I contacted the manufacturers. I contacted Mercedes, a local Mercedes, and they said it would take 4 weeks to make the key.
Wow.
And I can't really, you know, it's a long time to wait. So I feel like I'm just really stuck now waiting for this key to either come to the destination address where I'm staying with my cousin, who's kindly looking after me and, you know.
And how long, I'm not saying you overstayed your welcome, but how long have you overstayed, Caroline?
I've overstayed now. I've been here since Monday the 23rd of September. The 8th of October? I was planning to go back around about the 29th, 30th of September.
Wow.
So I'm really, really... overstaying.
But this is, I presume, because you have to do the same here. If you want to post anything to England, that's not a basic envelope with just one piece of card or whatever in it. If you want to post anything to England now that has any way bulky, you've got to go for in private. You've got to go to the post office. I pity the poor post office staff, by the way. You have to fill out this ream of forms. You have to declare what's in it. You didn't have to do that before Brexit.
I know. Well, the thing is, I'm not used to just sending anything, really.
Yeah, I know.
You know, son's not used to doing it either. But I would have thought the post office in Coventry would have understood the procedure. But I suppose.
And you're saying
value.
If on the form they had put in £1 sterling, it would have been.
Would have been on its way.
£1 sterling, yeah.
Well, they did put a penny value, but that wasn't good enough, apparently. If there was a value, say, of €1 or £1 or £5,
it
would have been on its way.
Caroline, we heard a few months ago from a business in the UK, a small publisher, who's basically said he's going to go out of business because of Brexit, because he's sending books to Ireland, because of all this paperwork, and then has been sent back from here to say, which looks like going to happen with your key, that the paperwork is not adequate. Blame Boris Johnson.
I just want my key back. I don't want to blame anybody. I just want the key and to get moving, you know, because it's feel like I'm stranded.
What about a locksmith?
Well, a locksmith, I did contact a locksmith, but they wanted €800.
Wow.
And they'd have it made in 2 hours. But the thing is, I'm worrying them, why could they make it in 2 hours when Mercedes are going to take 4 weeks? I could get
that key
and then I'm on my way and then it's not going to work. So I'm too nervous to make that call on it to do that. I'm too scared to do that.
And by the way, your car is parked up somewhere where you wouldn't have chosen to park it, I presume, because... Has anyone spotted a car? Has anyone come to you and said...
Yeah, the guards have contacted me because I left my number and my name in the dash.
okay.
at the car, and they've contacted me to say, "Are you okay?"
Ah,
you
know, because the guard saw this card. Brilliant guard, but the second time today they're being praised rightly. So the guardy saw this car. They noticed maybe after a day there was no one in. They went up to the car and they saw a phone number and a name. They looked at the empty car and they looked at the beach.
Yeah.
Oh my
God. And they rang me to say, are you all right? Yeah. So I thought that was really, really good of them.
That's good, yeah.
I felt quite overwhelmed when they called me. You know, somebody actually cares.
Yeah.
About my situation.
And just what year is the Merc? What year is the car?
It's 12 years old. 12 years old car.
And it is an electronic key. So
it's an electronic, it's one of them fobs. So, all I really want is to get that key on its way, and then when it gets back to Coventry, I can hop on a plane, go and collect it, and then fly back and then get on my way. Because I'm scared now to put it in the post again because of all of this. All this bureaucracy, it's crazy.
Wow. And I'm just thinking, you said you were walking on the rocks on the beach. I presume by the time you spotted that you'd lost your keys, I presume the tide. I don't want people walking on rocks.
It was only like small little rocks by the by of here.
And just in case, Caroline, someone might have picked up the keys if they were out walking. Was it a key on its own? Was there anything that would denominate?
There was a house key. A house key on it, and there was also a medallion thing, half a crown. A lucky half a crown.
Lucky half a crown.
And then there was a soup. Yeah, that lucky.
And how have you been?
There was like
apart from ringing the Dublin Mail Centre, how have you been passing your time on your overstay? And well, worried as well about all the different things on your shoulder between your mother and your mother.
I'm so worried. And I can't sleep with the worry of it all. I'm at my wit's end. Yeah, I'm really upset about it. It stressed me out big time. It stressed me out really, really badly.
Just shows you simple thing.
You kind of feel.
You feel what? You feel what?
I feel lost. Yeah, I really do feel lost. Yeah. And then I'm worrying about the elderly mothers back at home, and you know, my mother-in-law can't get out to do shopping. She can't get out to get a hair done. She depends on them so heavily, you know.
Yeah.
And then my mum in the home with the Alzheimer's, she'll be wondering where I am. I just feel like we're sort of stuck in a crazy situation.
And if you manage to get into the car through the boot or a window or anything, would that make a difference? No, you still couldn't start it, I presume.
Well, the car is actually open.
Oh, it's open. Oh, it is open. Well, then,
the car is accessible. But, and then the alarm goes off when you open it. But, I just need the key to get the car, get going, you know. And the locals have been so good on the beach, you know, they've all been looking for us, and every time they're going down, they're walking, they're searching for them. So the people have been so good to us, really, so kind and helpful, and sorry for our situation.
Okay. Well, Caroline, hopefully someone is listening that might be able to unlock, pardon the pun, your awful situation. It is, and it's a reminder to people.
Well, if anyone is listening from Ampost, if they could just really, really escalate it, so either I can come to Dublin to collect the key, or they can just make an exceptional circumstance where they can deliver it to the address it's meant to be. I'll pay extra money, I don't care, but I'm happy to do that. Or either just expedite it on its way to Coventry.
You see, we have a brilliant postal service in Ireland, by the way. Brilliant postal service.
I'm sure you do.
But I'm sure they're saying the rules are the rules, and this is where you're out. Yeah. It's coming from a country that's outside the EU.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that was your choice or not, but and it was a pretty tight vote for a finish. But anyway.
Yeah. It's not helping me at the moment.
Yeah, well, the key, unfortunately, the key is in Coventry, metaphorically, but the Coventry is up in Dublin 12. And I'm supposed to say they can't do anything. They can't enter the centre where the letter is.
Yeah.
But have you been able to give on post a tracking number and all that? In other words, they could identify the envelope.
Yeah, I've been in constant contact.
But has anyone in Ampost been able to put that envelope into their hand?
I don't know. They haven't told me that.
Okay, but if they have numbers, they should be able to find it. And then let's try and move forward.
Yeah. Well, they said yesterday that it was moving. And so since last Thursday, it kind of sat there till yesterday. And now they're saying it's moving out of one centre and it's gone into another centre to be on its way back. So
I'm sure if Ampus found a creative way around this, I don't think Ursula von der Leyen is going to throw us out of the EU if we open one envelope to rescue somebody in Mayo. Don't tell Ursula. Don't tell Ursula. We opened an envelope we shouldn't have opened. She'd throw us out.
Oh my word!
Okay.
I know it's crazy.
Carolyn, how are you passing? You're in Lewisburg. It's beautiful. Great bookshops.
It's beautiful. My cousin Bernadette has been fantastic. She's been chauffeuring us around every day, and we've been to Ballintubber Abbey today. Yeah, she took us there today, so she's taken us out and about, and we're making the best of it. Put it that way.
You're like that. I know they got a lot of publicity. You're like the group in Belfast that were stuck on the cruise liner for 4 months, or was it even a cruise liner for 4 months? But you're stuck here in Ireland.
I know. It's a nice place to be stuck,
not when you have all those worries, and then you say you're not sleeping. That's very tough.
I'm not sleeping. Yeah, I'm not sleeping. It's really stressing me out. It's making me feel a bit ill.
And can you even concentrate and read, or can you?
It's making me shaky. It's making me quite shook up. It's really starting to stress me. You know, I feel like it's a never-ending nightmare. I feel like I'm in a dream and I'm going to wake up from it, and I'm not.
Okay, because your neighbour there in Mayo, Sally Rooney, has just written another fantastic book called Intermezzo. If you get a chance to go into the bookshop in Lewisburg, I'm sure there's probably even signed copies. It's a big book, and if you can concentrate, it would be a great diversion for a few days, to say the least. But let's hope there's somebody listening that can help us, Caroline.
Thank you. And I really hope
your husband still here with you, Caroline?
My husband's here with me, yes. So I'm glad he's with me. Yeah, we're sticking together. And we haven't fallen out yet, so that's a good thing. But if, he's not blaming me for losing the keys.
But were we okay after the fall?
Yeah, I was a bit shook up and I hurt my hand a little bit. Okay. But yeah, I was okay.
And Caroline, both of you work in the home, but have both of you jobs to go back to that you're absent from at the minute?
No, thankfully, we're not. We both retired in April, so that's a big relief. Okay. We're both retired now. So,
but you didn't know you were retiring to Ireland.
We'd like to retire here, but not just yet. We'd like to plan it properly, you know.
Yeah. Caroline, come on, the lad. There's a great crew up at the DMC, and I know the rules are the rules. And there's a great MD in Post, David Mac Redmond, and there's great people in Ampost who I think they will, if they hear the story. I don't know whether they will or not, but if they hear
them,
If they hear the story, there's Anna McHugh, everyone knows her, the best PR person in the country. Any metal detectors out on the beaches of Mayo. If you found a key ring with a half crown on it, that's the thing, isn't it, Teresa? Okay.
Yeah. All right.
I hate saying this to you. I hope your stay in Ireland is very, very short from now on. Okay, Caroline.
Yeah, I hope next time I come, I don't lose the keys.
Okay.
But thanks very much for the call and flagging it up and highlighting it to everyone. Appreciate it.
Caroline. If there is another vote on Brexit.
No, I'm not voting. I'm not voting for Brexit ever again. I'm finished with voting.
Okay. Thanks, Caroline. That's Caroline Taylor, joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Any commuter in Dublin over the last few days, I can't speak for outside the capital, and I can only speak for parts of it, but every bus shelter has these new expensive posters from the National Transport Authority. That means it's paid for by you and I, the taxpayer. And it basically has a photograph or an image of an e-scooter. And you'd swear to God the e-scooter was a ballistic missile. They're so dangerous, according to the NTA. And it says, reminder, warning, e-scooters are now banned from public, as I say, as if they were a shotgun. And that has meant, apart from anything else, that anyone that attempts to get on a bus with any form of scooter is challenged. Teresa, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, what you have a scooter, and you say since this blanket ban came in, since this draconian ban came in, which is advertised everywhere as if e-scooters and any form of scooters were ballistic missiles, what has been the attitude as you got on the bus, Teresa?
Like, what I wanted to say is that the scooter that I have is a regular scooter.
Yep.
It's just an adult size scooter that I bought quite some time to help me go around because with the public transport the way as it is, it's just not good for anything where I live and to where I have to be. So I got myself the scooter a year ago. And for quite some time, I noticed, you know, a bit of a hostility when I'm using a public transport.
Yeah.
You know, it's both sometimes, you know, you can see, you know, people giving me, you know, a bit of a, you know, funny looks. And sometimes now, for the last couple of weeks, I could hear people really commenting out loud that scooters shouldn't supposed to be on Luas and things like that, because it's primarily Luas that I use. Whereas, like, my scooter is completely safe. It's just an adult-sized regular scooter.
Yeah, but it looks like a lot of electric scooters and normal scooters or whatever, they all look the same, don't they? Have you got wires, brake wires or anything on your one?
Like what I have is a brake, which is like a, you know, handbrake.
Yeah.
So this is the kind of misleading part. But if you look close, you'll see that there is no battery.
Yeah,
so some people first comment and they look up and then they look awkward. But some of them, like, really, like, they just point blank, they would comment, you know, why is this scooter here that I'm taking space for boogies and things like that. Whereas I'm always a polite person just, you know, give up us because I'm a mother as well, and the purpose for which I have the scooter is just to facilitate my children being taken, you know, from school on time and being brought to places. Like my son is in a swim club and he would never make to his swim practice if it wasn't me who is going on the scooter with him, because he's just 9. So, like, I have to bring him up there. So for me, it's scooter or nothing. And I would have to tell him, look, child, you can't go there, because, like, I'm visually impaired to the extent that I'm very safe on the road when it comes to using scooters, bikes, that sort of things. I just don't see well in the hours of kind of, you know, darkness when there is a poor contrast. That's why I made a conscious decision not to even apply for a driver's license, which I possibly could have. And I use the scooter instead, because, you know, I don't want to be, you know, in any sort of, you know, I don't want to be a danger on the road to anybody. But, you know, like, and for me, like, you know, the place where my school is, my kids' school is in Klonsky, which is a horrendous place when it comes to public transport. So me going there on scooter and using public transport is, you know, like, instead of, you know, being rewarded or, like, you know, like a crispy on another car, then, you know, I have to face, you know, a hostility, which is very annoying sometimes. That's why I would like to say, you know, that's why I contacted you today, just to say to people that, you know, don't judge. Look, you know, closely say something.
Teresa, I take your point about not judging. But the National Transport Authority, I don't know what evidence, they said something, smoke came out of an e-scooter in Barcelona or something. The National Transport Authority has decided that e-scooters are bad. just bad. I have a statement. I read it out to you today. I think it was a train
in Madrid that, you know, there was a problem with e-scooter, and that's why it kind of stirred the whole controversy when it comes to scooters. But, like in my case, you know, I am being at the receiving end of, you know, people. Yeah.
You're going to get that.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you've seen these posters. Have you seen these posters at the bus stop?
No, I haven't seen them yet.
Well, if you see the poster, Teresa, even though your scooter is allowed, I guarantee you will be afraid. Yeah. You will be afraid to get on the bus. Because they make the scooter out to be, as I say, a ballistic missile. And by the way, you're probably getting on an electric bus. And if you do, as I do when I'm not washing my hair, I sometimes go onto YouTube and I'm obsessed with fire engines and all that. And one of the big things that comes up on YouTube recently is electric buses on fire.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, like, you know, it's mind-boggling for me, to be honest. Like, you know, how the system works in Ireland. I live here for 19 years.
Yeah, but remember, all you have to... In Ireland...
I don't understand, you know, a lot of reasons, because I see, like, you know, is it the real reason that, you know, the government wants to really try to cut on the use of public scooters, and this is kind of middle ground way of doing it, or is it really the concern, you know, the fire hazards? Like, you know, because, like, the real problem is, you know, because, like, one of my very good friends lives in Docklands, and you know, she sees the drug dealing, you know, on the e-scooters on day-to-day basis, and nobody is doing anything about this. And then, you know, this is the real core issue, and this is the real problem, rather than, and these guys going, like, you know, crazy mad, and, you know, with horrendous speed, as it were, like, for me to go with some substantial speed, the gravity has to be in my favor, which isn't the case in Dublin very often, you know, with, you know, hills and up and down.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, even the speed that I can get on is, you know, is obviously limited. But, like, I'm just, like, you know, I would say that, you know, if there's anything good coming out of our conversation would be, like, you know, if people see somebody like me who doesn't look like a drug dealer on Luas with a scooter that does not have a huge battery, you know, that should make them think maybe a little bit that there is a reason why I am using the scooter today.
But Teresa, I also think a few, I don't know whether it's on the Luas or not, but a few e-scooter users, from the stories we're hearing, especially around town, inner city Dublin, a few e-scooter users have been getting every e-scooter user and every scooter user, including yourself, a bad name. And then the NTA just put in the word safety, and no one can argue with them. No one can argue with them. They say, oh, safety force. Yeah, if that was safety force, you wouldn't be buying electric buses in the first place, because some of them go on fire. But anyway, and then mobile phones go on fire, power banks go on fire, loads of things go on fire, but it's very, very rare, and it can be dealt with. That's why every city and every county and every village in some shape or other has a fire service, because there do be fires, as the fella said. There do be fires. We don't want them. But we live in a world powered by electricity, and if electricity can generate flames.
Exactly,
obviously.
But, you know, the other thing is that, you know, if in Dublin, if the public service was excellent,
that's an international.
That would be another thing. But just to put you in the right perspective, between my house and my kids' school, the distance is 6.5 kilometers. Yeah. If I only walk and take Luas, it takes me 1 hour one way.
For six kilometers,
because the public transport is so poor. I don't have a direct bus that goes, and it's not, you know, in the middle of nowhere. It's actually bang on, you know, like you would consider Dublin 14 a city center. And there's a one bus line that could bring me to school, and this bus is one every 30 minutes.
Okay, I understand. And I think home carers going around trying to do the work. Lorraine, good afternoon.
Hiya.
What's your point, please?
My point is, I was driving along the other day, and a girl on an electric scooter flew up the inside of me. You know, I was at the check in my left-hand lane.
And hang on, were you driving? Were you on the Luas?
Not the Lewis. We're talking about electric scooters, aren't we?
No, we're talking about electric scooters being banned from the Lewis and from buses.
Oh, yeah. Well, I agree with that.
Why?
But my point was, just because
your
they're
point,
so you, fast...
Hang on, Lorraine. Hang on. When Teresa gets on the Lewis or the 46A with her scooter, she's not flying up and down.
No, that's fair enough. She does. They are very big.
Yeah, so's a buggy. So is a wheelchair.
Fair enough, yeah. Well, I think it's a good idea.
But Lorraine, hang on, Lorraine, you're saying they're a scourge because they nearly, you were in a car, but that's not what the national transport is. If the state, which it should be, the state wants to regulate e-scooters and even register them so you know who that girl was, there needs to be a number on the machine or a tabard if she had to wear one on an e-scooter. But that's not the problem they're dealing with. They say there is a problem with e-scooters going on fire on the Lewis, the train, the Éireann Road Éireann, the Dart, and the bus. Dublin bus.
Well, has that happened?
No.
Just in case.
But the national transport, they have to be doing something and banning something and spending money on stupid ads at stupid, stupid places that we're all paying for.
Yeah, well, look, fair enough, Joe. Okay. I was actually talking about the speed.
I agree with
you.
I was standing, Lorraine, not too long ago, outside Store Street Garda Station. I was actually going to get on the Lewis, I think. And this fella came up and clipped me. Not deliberately, you know. If he knew where he was, he probably would have killed me. But he flew by me on the footpath. That's what they should be policing.
Yeah, I know.
I agree with you.
I just wanted to say, I was driving along the other day. A girl, I didn't know at the time it was a girl, but a girl flew up on my left-hand mirror. I was after checking it a few times. There was nothing there. And literally out of nowhere, she flew by me. She was on the left-hand side and then flew across in front of me.
I know.
She was holding on with one hand and she was on the phone with the other. She was like a ballistic missile flying by me. And if I had hit her, it would have been me in trouble.
No, so I know that. God forbid. We don't want to be hitting anybody, but...
Yeah, and for the Lewis, I mean, they are big. It's hard enough to get a standing place on a Lewis without the extra burden of having to make your way around the scooter.
But then we need bigger trams on the Lewis. You know what I mean?
We
need more than two Lewis lines. By the way, who's in charge of that? Oh, the National Transport Authority.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
By the way, just during the break there, I went into YouTube, electric bus fires. It's a list of them, a list up and down. I went in and put in... e-scooter fires. So far, I haven't found one. I keep going after the programme. And remember, they're after buying 100 buses, 120 buses, e-buses, and they cost 80.4 million, believe it or not. So you're talking a lot of money. Will the NTA take all the e-buses off the road now that they've taken the e-scooters? Mark McGrath, sound broadcast coordinator, Shane Galvin, Owen McLaughlin, producer, Ray Darcy, next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover our new autumn collection with fresh designs and cosy colours. In-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.